I have to say, it's quite a unusual scenario where I get to welcome people to Ann Arbor. I don't normally speak at conferences that happen in Ann Arbor. Normally I'm traveling, and so it's great to be able just to kind of come from home here. It's great to meet all of y'all, too. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's one of the things that we do in serving the blind, the visually impaired, the print disabled user community. That's something that we're really proud of, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But I'm going to talk first a little about the history of about Hathi Trust. So this is my title slide. I am using slides, and I've tried to keep the slides pretty close to what I'm going to be saying, because I wasn't very imaginative in coming up with clever things to say on the slides, but more just because I want to make sure these are available to folks who are not able to attend today and get a sense of what I'm talking about. So again, thank you all, and thanks for the pleasure and the privilege. So I'm going to talk first about what is this thing called Hathi Trust, what we do, how we work, who we are, what our collection, our digital book collection, consists of, and a little bit of history of how we got to be. And after that, I'm going to talk more specifically about how we support users at our member institutions who are print disabled. A few things that we have in place now, some challenges we face, and some things we're looking at for the future. And I want to make sure there's some time for questions here at the end. I think I should probably go ahead and explain, though, real quick, what's the name, Hathi, what's that all about? Hathi, if you're familiar with The Jungle Book by Rudyard Kipling, there's a character named Colonel Hathi. He's an elephant. Elephants are known for their long lives. The character has characteristics of being trustful and just, and so we thought that was kind of a cool name to have for a library thing. So that is Hathi Trust. So many people know us as a website where you can go and find huge numbers of digital books. The website is www.hathitrust.org. That's H-A-T-H-I. trust.org, and it is that is certainly what one thing that we are. We have this huge collection of digital books that are available for reading around the world at this site. But I always want to inform people that we're much more than a website, much more than simply a digital library. In fact, we really are a membership organization that has a broad mission that's very much like a library mission. I mean, I think if you were to take our mission and set it down compared to almost any other library, academic library in particular, you would see a lot of similarities. So we are first and foremost a organization that commits to preserving the digitized record and the digital record of cultural heritage and scholarly knowledge. As Josie said, we have over 125 members today. We are based here at the University of Michigan. I work down the street. But I think maybe more importantly in the story that I really like to tell is what else we do besides collect these books and preserve them. Because it's by collecting such a large, a number of digital books, we've been able to take on some challenges that, and with a large membership, we can take on challenges that we ordinarily couldn't do if we were just a single library. I'm really happy about being able to work here for that reason. So I mentioned that we are a membership organization, so I want to just say a few words about our philosophy about this, because I think in some ways I think it will resonate with this group. We really are an organization that's committed to the collective development of a public good, right? We're about certainly serving users at our member institutions, but I think what we're really proud of is the fact that we've created this resource that is available as broadly as we can make it around the world. And if you actually were to look at our user logs, I could tell you that most of our users come from not at the academic institutions that support us. They come from everywhere around the world. And it's amazing to see the kind of use we get. One of my favorite things to do is to kind of monitor Twitter and see what people are saying about us. Usually it's good. The other thing I will say is that even though we provide some access support to our members, we really don't consider what we do a subscription service. You know, a lot of times you will join an organization primarily so you can get the magazine or the publication, but that's not what we're about. And we always want to remind people of that. In fact, you know, we really build on the effort of our organizations. We have some of our services are distributed at the University of Illinois, at Indiana, also at California. And a lot of our work is undertaken by I will call it volunteers. It's really the institutions committing their staff time towards projects that we work on. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have individual membership. So it's really much based around affiliation with the organizations that are that we work with. The collection today is, as of this morning, I checked, just over 15.6 million volumes, right? So 15.6 million digitized books. Of that collection, only a smaller portion of it is available for public access in general. So about almost 6 million, 5.85 million books are available openly in some form. The rest of the collection is available for search. And it is also available for certain kinds of access that we can do in the United States under copyright law. And I'll talk briefly about some of those. Mostly the collection is published books from academic libraries. And I always say mostly those things because sometimes some special collections will creep in. Sometimes someone will bind a reproduction of a 13th century manuscript and that gets scanned and that's found. But it's really mostly books that we're talking about here. So I'll talk quickly about access in general and our philosophy of this. And then I'll get into a little bit more detail, I think maybe more specifically interesting to this audience. So for anybody in the world, we allow individuals to have access to any book that is open, right? Any book that we've determined to be out of copyright or any book that a rights holder or publisher and author has said to us, you know what, we're happy to make that freely available. We will open those materials up and those books can be read by anybody around the world. They've been digitized, to my knowledge, there is nothing in the collection that hasn't been digitized without OCR behind it. Now, the OCR might be a varying quality, especially when you start to deal with non-Roman alphabets, but everything should have OCR behind it. We do allow full-text searching, as I said, of the entire collection, so it is useful as a reference source in the same way that Google Books is somewhat useful as a reference source, even for things that you can't read online. So if you're at a member institution like the University of Michigan or Minnesota, University of Iowa, there are some additional services that we can provide. So the individuals at those institutions can download the books in full. The libraries can take advantage of a provision in the copyright law which allows for the replacement of lost copies. So if a book has been lost, it's damaged or missing, there's a preservation exemption for libraries, and we can make a replacement copy available if that's not on the market any longer. And then the other service that we is taken advantage of more frequently than the replacement copy is access for students, for faculty, staff who are print disabled. And I do have on the slide a link to our accessibility policies and our program there. I will talk a little bit more in detail about them, though. So how did this collection come to be? I didn't read it off, but my title was involved mass digitization and the potential for universal access. And that really was kind of an amazing idea about 15 years ago. In the 1990s and before that, libraries had been digitizing collections. In the 90s, it became a more urgent, a more interesting, a more commonly found activity in libraries because the web, right? It amazes me. I can remember before there was a web, and I work with people who don't even remember that TV used to go off at 2 a.m. That's right. We had to work without the web. But when the web became available in 1993, a lot of libraries really were pioneers in digitizing things and putting collections online. The University of Michigan was definitely one of them. I always looked with some degree of envy when I was at the University of Virginia at what Michigan was able to accomplish, even though we thought we were doing pretty well too, but Michigan, you know, was our secret rival. We try not to let them know about it, but they seem to know anyway. So Michigan really took a lead, and it was digitizing books in the tens of thousands, mostly 19th century books. A lot of them had been microfilmed. They would be made available online, but at the pace that they were digitizing books at the collection, it could have taken hundreds of years to do that job. So in 2002, it turns out that one of the founders of Google is an alumni of the University of Michigan. And so there was a conversation initiated. I never have been quite sure how it got started. I wasn't here at the time. Between Google and the University of Michigan, remember, Google at that time was only about 4 years old. So it was still new, right? And the conversation went along the lines like, what if we digitized everything in the University of Michigan collection? That had been an idea that the founders of Google had in grad school when they were at Stanford, that they thought that would be a pretty cool thing if we could, you know, for our search service, not just the web, but digitize all the books. And so they approached Michigan and Stanford and a few others about this idea. And Michigan really went whole hog, as we say, down south. They jumped in with arms and legs and everything and said, hell yeah, we want to do that. And so they spent the next couple of years working it out. Actually, my office is in the building where they started the digitizing pilots, which is a weird coincidence. When I moved there, I didn't know that until later on. So that started in 2002. That would have been like 10 million books at the time, something like that. And then this was top secret, even though we heard rumors about it at other institutions and nobody would tell us, like at Virginia, where we wondered what was going on. And so in 2004, at the very end of the year, it was in the New York Times, Google announced that they would work with Michigan and Stanford and Oxford University and New York Public Library and Harvard University to scan collections from those libraries. This was amazing, right? I mean, the idea that this many books could get scanned by and that as quickly as they were promising, and they didn't say how quickly, but the implicit, you know, understanding was pretty fast, because Google even then had a lot of money, and they seemed to be really willing to put a lot into it. So Google announced that, and it was, just kind of, I'll talk a little bit more about some of the reaction in a second. You know, most of us were really thrilled, others were a little bit less so. Over the next couple of years, Michigan started working with its colleagues in the Big Ten Academic Conference, which also happens to have an athletic conference attached to it. You may have heard of it. They started talking about banding together. All the other libraries were starting to work with Google at that time. And they said, you know, we really need to create a digital repository, a service that can collect all of these scans together because we can do more together than we can apart. And they all said, that'd be great. We'll name it this cool name, the Shared Digital Repository. And then in 2008, the University of California joined. They thought, you know, that shared digital repository name really stinks. Let's come up with something that nobody will understand, like HathiTrust. And so we were founded with that name in that year. And today, in 2017, Google continues to scan, and we still collect books. And I won't say that between 2008 and 2017 nothing happened, but I'll get to that. When we got together as HathiTrust, and when the Big Ten libraries got together, the idea really was that, you know, we're libraries and Google is not, right? We have a particular mission to preserve and steward the record of human knowledge. And for that reason, we need to band together. And it took some conversations with Google early on to explain this. Like, yeah, we know you want to be around forever, but we're really going to be. And I think in some ways, nothing against Google. They've managed to stick it out for 20 years now. I think there's also something else to say here, which is that I think at the beginning, the libraries themselves were in some ways more ambitious than even Google was. And that's partly because the libraries had some opportunities that Google did not as a commercial entity. Right, libraries have particular missions, they have particular cultures, they have particular services they provide, and they have certain things they can do under the law that a commercial entity can't, right? Like provide preservation access, like support users who are blind or print disabled. And we really believe that we know our communities better than a tech giant, as great as the service is and as important as it is and as impossible to avoid as it is at this time. So that's why we got started. We really felt like we had a mission to do, and we could better do it together with Google's partnership than relying solely on that organization. So I said, you know, there were some reactions, and most of us were happy, and others were, you know, quick to point out faults. And I think some of these are legitimate, right? So early on, many people were like, well, you're working with a commercial partner. Why is a library whose job is to share knowledge working with a commercial agent, right, and helping them put knowledge behind, you know, a gate? And obviously that our mission, our goal was to open up more, but that was something we heard a lot. A lot of folks early on also criticized the quality. There were some notorious articles in major magazines, you know, Google scans with hands in them, fingers on them, you know, bad scans with warping into pages, some things I'm sure you've seen yourself in your own line of works. The metadata, you know, users were criticizing the metadata. The metadata was bad. The librarian said, yeah, we know. This is the library land. We live it. You know, that's what we're used to. Our metadata is as wonky as it gets, but we love it anyway, and we're going to do our best to make it better. And then OCR was unreliable. And I think so where I want to say there's some legit criticism here was that, maybe all of these were legitimate in some ways, but I think early on it took time for the quality to improve. Right. I mean, I think that, you know, everything was moving lickety split, rapid, fast, rapid. And you're scanning millions of pages a day or a week, or the number was supposed to be a secret, so I don't really know. But, you know, things were going to get broken, and they, you know, there was a commitment to improve, and they really have greatly improved over the last 15 years. But probably the most famous complaint is one that came out with a sputter and, you know, kind of apoplexy falling on the ground from certain communities like publishers, which was that this is really a complete violation of copyright law. I can't believe you're even considering this, and how dare you? And you know, there was real question about whether or not this was a lawful set of activity. Michigan certainly believes so. One of the great things about the University of Michigan is that it stands up for what it believes is right and valuable. It's done that in cases related to affirmative action and equal opportunity, and it did that in this situation where it said, you know, our mission is to share knowledge. This is what this is about, and we absolutely can do this under the law. So, that had to be tested out in court. So Google got sued first. They were the ones with the money, so they got sued first. First by the Authors Guild, and then by publishers. And that kind of dragged on for a while. And then in 2007, some of you may remember this. I hope this is not boring anybody who doesn't know this. 2007, the publishers, the authors, and Google got together and announced a major settlement. And the settlement would have done some amazing things. The settlement would have allowed Google to provide access to works that were in copyright in public libraries and to other libraries for a subscription cost. Part of that cost would go back to the authors and publishers. There were going to be creating registries of authors to help individuals collect revenue and royalties for the works that they had generated. But there was a lot of criticism of this settlement because it seemed to give Google primary, if not monopolistic, control over the resources that it had scanned here, given them exclusive commercial advantage, and was excluding other major players like, say, Amazon, or even non-commercial players like Internet Archive. And so ultimately, the Obama administration, Justice Department, opposed this lawsuit and that settlement, and that was really the death knell for it. And at that point, we pretty much knew it was not going to happen, and the settlement fell apart. A lot of good things in that settlement, a lot of things that were questionable, I think people have agreed in retrospect. But anyway, so the publishers said, okay, fine, we've had enough, we're going to settle with Google. They figured something out. Authors Guild said, hell no, we're going to keep fighting Google on this. And then in 2011, just for kicks, Google sued HathiTrust as well. They actually had a stated reason. It had to do with some plans we had for making orphan works available to users at libraries. During that lawsuit, the National Federation of the Blind joined the suit as a co-defendant. And with that, we were able to make additional arguments around the utility of the service for users who are blind, visually impaired, and print disabled users. And in 2012, it didn't take long, the first federal court said, yeah, you know what, you're right, HathiTrust, you're in the clear, Authors Guild, you guys, no, sorry, go home. And they said it in a much more legalistic way than that, and with a little more grace. And then it was appealed to the federal level. And I started in May 2014. On June 6th, I think, 2014, the Second Federal Circuit of Appeals said, hey, guess what? On antitrust, you're in the clear. We agree with the lower court ruling. And, you know, I just walked on stage, and it's like, you know, the clouds lifted, and I wish I could take credit for it. I didn't have to live through the discovery phases. So but at any rate, they still were in suit with Google. They appealed the Google case up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court refused to hear it. So here we are today. What we do is no longer under a specific legal threat. I hope you don't mind me telling that story in some detail. I love to tell it because we won. So what this round of lawsuits did for us, besides put us through a lot of expense, trouble, heartache, misery, was it actually did settle some things. There were some things that the Authors Guild claimed that were just not going to hold up in court, and the court went pretty far in clarifying things. And in some ways, this is being recorded, right? Well, there's not that many people, so I always want to thank the Authors Guild for suing us, because they actually clarified many things about fair use law and law under copyright. So we didn't gain any new rights under this lawsuit or under the ruling, right? But it did clarify some things for us. So first of all, you know, it said, keep going. What you're doing is great. You're fine. You're in the clear. Digitized for full text search, that's in the clear. That's a fair use. But that the ruling also clearly stated that a university like the University of Michigan was in fact an authorized entity under Section 121 of the Copyright Act, the Chafee Amendment, which you know, specifies that libraries or authorized entities, I should say, can make specialized formats available to disabled individuals. So in the next round at the appeals court level, the Second Circuit said something we weren't entirely expecting, which was that, yeah, and also, if you digitize for access to this community, it's a fair use as well. You're making a transformative use, right? The idea was that the book in its original form was not being prepared for a particular user community. By scanning it and preparing it for these communities, you were transforming the work that in a way that it wasn't originally intended. And in fact, that's good too. So we have, you know, some additional support there. And there were some other things in the suit that helped us open up some doors too, but it was really this additional clarity that helped us expand some of our services for users. So I want to talk about those now and give you a little bit of, I'm not going to talk about this in great detail, but I'll give you the parameters of it, and I'm happy to take some questions. So for individuals who are print disabled, and we deliberately use that phrase because it's a broad community of users who we think are eligible here, we provide access to any item in the digital library that without regard to copyright status. Okay, so the public domain works, the out of copyright works, we provide access to anybody in the world, but the in copyright works we can provide access to for users who are blind or otherwise print disabled. We at HathiTrust, my staff, does not undertake that determination of eligibility, right? We don't review documentation, we don't talk to end users. Because we have 100 and some members, we ask them to do that, right? And these are almost all universities and colleges. They're all well-versed in providing services, or many of them are anyway, to these communities, and have processes in place for determining eligibility and providing support. And so we rely on them to do that. So the access and the eligibility is managed by the local member institution. Okay. So there are some constraints on this service. So I want to be upfront about those. The end user, the eligible user, does need to be affiliated with the member institution, right? So they have to be a student, a faculty member, a staff member. They have to have some affiliation as a user. We, as I said before, access is not, we don't provide direct access, or so we rely on the member to do the access part. So there is a user, an individual on each campus or more, who we've given this unfortunate name in our documentation as proxy users, right? So folks like yourselves who are really service providers to communities on campus, they're the ones who are helping to provide access to the HathiTrust Digital Library. We don't provide direct access to the digital library to those users itself. And I mean, we don't provide direct access to the end copyright materials for those eligible users. We rely on the proxy to provide that access. The content that is downloaded is it's similar to what we provide to any other user. It is a PDF with page images and the OCR behind it. We've done a lot of work to test the PDFs that we produce to make sure that the OCR comes out okay. We've had to do some work to make sure that watermarks that get added with copyright notices don't get picked up by screen readers. So we've done a lot of work to improve that, and we're always looking for reports of problems. So the proxy works with the individual as needed to get that file to the individual, to reformat it if necessary, to provide assistance in finding, locating. So that's the basics of how the service works. So that's about almost 9 million books available to these students and faculty and staff and other users at our member institutions, in addition to the 5.8 million that are open, which can be accessed online in full text as well as page images. So what do we know about the usage of this service? And I have to say that because we are a step removed, we don't know as much as we might like to. In fact, this is actually one of the things I miss about working in it as a service provider in a library and being responsible for services to a specific community is I don't actually have as much contact with users as I used to. I see students on campus, but I hardly ever talk to them anymore. And you know, I've reached the age where they stop looking at me. So, you know, if I have to like tell them I'm here before they walk over me on the sidewalk. So, but anyway, what we know about this is that the individuals, the service providers, some of these folks are in the academic library, some are in the Office of Student Services, some of them are in an Office of Student Services that's located in the library. It really varies. Of the 128 members, this is the most recent number from earlier this week, of the currently 128 members we have, 58 of those have signed on to the service. So there are folks at those 58 institutions, the 85 different people at those 58 institutions are signed on. They have access to HathiTrust and can gain access to these books for their users. Of those 85, they accessed the service 5,100 times last year. There are not as many downloads of volumes, right? So downloads were fewer. A lot of people were testing things out or searching. There's a wide range of actual usage. Some places have not had any usage since they've signed on. Some have had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of volumes downloaded for users at their campus. We're still trying to figure out what accounts for the variation. I think in some cases it is that the service is not well known, or that access to HathiTrust is, you know, provided, but it hasn't been well publicized. I think in other cases there's some really active users who are studying particular subjects and are really doing thorough research literature searches and reviews. So it's really a wide range. A few observations, some challenges, some complaints I will acknowledge. First of all, the collection that we have is often of limited use to first and second year undergraduates because I don't mean to criticize first year undergraduates, just that their classes tend not to be often as heavily research involved. There might be some research involved, but upper level undergraduates is when they really start getting exposed to library research in depth beyond, you know, some basic general literature. Graduate students, faculty members, researchers, those are the folks who tend to be the heaviest users of the collections of academic libraries, and they are generally going to be the folks who gravitate towards this collection, because I always tell people ask me, what's in HathiTrust? I say, well, if you go to your college library, you browse the shelves, it's a lot of that. It's not a lot of popular literature. It's not a lot of the current New York, in fact, it's none of the current New York Times bestseller list. So that's one observation I have, and what I know from talking with a lot of folks at academic institutions who support students with disabilities is that they're really often consumed with providing access to textbooks for these undergraduate students, right? That textbook access is the key thing that really drives a lot of these offices in the first 2 months of their semesters. Other complaints, the process for access is clunky. And I will state that upright. I don't state it as a proud fact, but it is clunky. We require them, if I'm going to be a member, the member needs to identify an individual who can do this work and then sign on, and we give them access, and we have to have specific authentication and so forth. And so it is a clunky service. I will admit that. One of the things that makes it clunky is that we're trying to manage a fair amount of legal risk, right? I don't want to, I've talked about how much, we won in the case, but the premise of that, of winning, was that what you're doing in providing access to specific eligible users, and only those users, of then copyright works, is that's lawful, right? You, HathiTrust, are not doing things like showing these books to any old user who walks, up to a computer, right? They're specifically provided for specific users. And remember, Google didn't ask permission from all these publishers and authors when they scanned those books. The premise was, we can do this if we are careful and follow fair use and so forth. So we don't have permission to open them up. We're doing this totally based on what the law permits as exceptions under the law. So that's one of the reasons the processes are clunky, right? So we have a lot of, security wrapped around things and authentication. Improving quality of the collection is also a challenge. As I mentioned before, it's OCR. We all know what OCR looks like. If you have some books, older books have really bad OCR because the scan might be of a page that has a tear in it, or the ink has kind of run over the decades in acidic paper. So the quality really can vary in there. And so it's a challenge to correct 15.6 million books. I mean, that's just not, humanly possible. So we look for machine ways to do this, and those are really in an early stage. Unfortunately, right now, we've talked about this, but we don't have a process for what I would call round tripping, right? So a book is downloaded, it's massaged, it's cleaned up. We don't have a process for that book to be resubmitted back to us. Our users have definitely asked for that. Some have asked for production of specialized formats as well, which we've not been able to undertake. But they are there. I would put those on lists of things I'm looking to invest in as soon as, and trying to understand how we can do. So what is next? What is next for us? Where are we and what is next? So three things I'll talk about briefly. Two of them very briefly, and one in a little bit more detail. First off, one of the things that we're exploring right now is collecting new books in a born digital format, right? So we've done everything, built all of our systems, all of our policies, everything around the idea that a book is scanned from a physical object. But that's not most books anymore. Most books are being produced digitally up front and then are getting printed. So what we're looking for are ways to collect more ebooks, and specifically looking for ways to collect open formats like the EPUB format, EPUB 3 in particular, because this holds greater promise for being accessible out of the box, if you will, right? The idea is that the material, if formatted properly as an EPUB, should be accessible out of the box. That still remains to be seen, and it's not widely adopted yet by publishers, I should say. The second thing we're doing, and this is not really actively doing anything, it's more like watching, and kind of like watching a pot boil or syrup drip, if you will, and that is watching the Senate, if they will ever get around to passing the ratification of the Marrakesh Treaty for access for users who are blind or visually impaired, because that treaty, if the U.S. signed it and ratified it, would enable us in the United States to export books to other countries for access by those users, right? And it would be clearly lawful under the law. Right now, U.S. copyright law doesn't say you can do that. I always say it doesn't say you can't, but we are pretty careful about that. And so if the Marrakesh Treaty were ratified, I think we would want to look for ways to work with partners outside of the United States to help provide access to books, because, really, the United States has been the major book publisher for the 20th century, it's sitting on a gold mine of books that are not available to users elsewhere. And then the third thing is something we're really proud of, very excited about, that is with a partnership with the National Federation of the Blind that we hope can provide access to the service more broadly. So let me talk about that in a little more detail. We announced this about a year ago, and we've been in testing and planning mode since then. So the idea here is that through the partnership, users who are affiliated in some way with the National Federation of the Blind would be able to gain access to the materials in HathiTrust. Okay, so there's a couple of things we're experimenting with here. First of all, it would operate for us in many ways like it does with our member libraries. The NFB would be the organization responsible for identifying individuals and certifying their eligibility, authorizing them. NFB would also provide a process for them, once authorized, to authenticate to HathiTrust, right? To log in to HathiTrust, right? So it would be done through an account provided by NFB. The authentication process is very similar to what we do for our members now. But we are asking to test out here and see if we can employ two-factor authentication with the idea that if we can get two-factor in place in a way that's low cost, and it will help us better manage the legal risk of providing access to individuals who we never see. And that additional security then would allow us to provide screen access to those individuals. Okay, so I'm being perfectly honest here. I'm laying on my cards on the table about why we are doing certain things, because I think it's important for you all to understand. And this is something that, you know, I've talked about endlessly with some attorneys who are incredibly supportive of what we do and incredibly supportive of support for this community, but are also very mindful of making sure that we do things in the right way so we don't put in danger the service that we've already got in place, right? We want to make sure that we don't do anything that will screw that up. So the current status of this, as I said, we've been in planning for a while. We're right now in this two-week period testing out the authentication processes between NFB and HathiTrust to make sure they talk to each other. Assuming that gets worked out, the next step is to plan and put in place a very small pilot with users. Second half of this year is the goal. That's the goal. I long ago, when I became an administrator, I stopped promising dates for anything, right? So I just always say that's the goal, you know, maybe. But that's definitely our plan right now, is that a small pilot would be put in place. Based on that, we can then develop the service for broader use. Just a couple of other things. NFB is not going to be a member of HathiTrust, and that's not to say that we don't value NFB. It's just to say that the missions are different, and because we have a mission that's really focused mostly on libraries and library services and helping libraries do better for their users, we think partnership with NFB is the best way to go about this. And HathiTrust members at those institutions will still have download access via proxy users, not just screen access. But I want to point out something, that is that if this authentication process works, it's successful, we want to be able to start looking for ways to expand this direct access to our member institutions. It raises for some of our members real issues of privacy to be, you know, using authentication protocols to identify individuals and who have certain requirements. So there's a lot of policy issues we're going to have to work through, but that's the plan. So my title was The Promise Had to Do with the Promise of Universal Access. And so are we there? No, not even close. Even the idea of, I often think of universal access as like that Greek paradox, right? You're always walking halfway to the door and you never quite get there, but you get closer every time. And so, but you know, today we've done a lot, but I really, as I hope you understand in what I've said, think we still have a lot to learn. We have a lot of stuff to figure out how to do better. There are still a lot of books to be digitized. Google has digitized many, many more books than we have in HathiTrust, and they are going to continue to digitize. And there are, in fact, many more books that, you know, in the world that haven't been scanned yet. We still have a lot of publishers to understand. That actually, that's a weird statement. What I'm trying to get across there is we still need publishers to understand. So basically what I'm confessing here is I made a typo when I put the slide together and I didn't see it. really, I think, you know, what we're trying to understand from publishers is, what is it that makes you unwilling to support these communities, right? What is it that makes it difficult for you in production of books to support these communities. And I say this because just a lot of publishers, academic publishers in particular, are really nervous, right? They still are very nervous about providing access to students who seem convinced that stuff's going to fly away to the Napster of ebooks, and you know that'll be that. And textbook, I mean, there's a textbook piracy market for sure. So that's, yeah, I understand that concern, but that's not the majority of this work. The majority of this work has really limited commercial value. I hate to tell the publishers that too. So small audiences, let's call it that. Anyway, I have talked for quite enough now. I would be happy to take questions, but I want to leave time just for those so we can get to the next speaker too. So thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
You guys tip into the world of journals or serials?
Yeah, as I said, sort of like whatever happened to be on the shelf got scanned in a lot of places, right? Monographs, yes, books for sure, but also journals and serials. Mostly, again, academic. Some popular titles are in there as well, but mostly academic titles. It's really challenging to know how many because metadata for serials is really bad. People record volume numbers really differently and so forth. So anyway, but yes, about 420,000 unique serial titles in the collection. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. I just don't have an idea how the National Federation project is going to work. They'll certify somebody as eligible, mm-hmm. and that person will then get on like their own personal PC or something and log into your site.
That's the idea. It would be through web browser, so the access is substantially similar to what we provide now. I definitely should have put this on the screen. During the pilot project, we're going to be going through several rounds of user experience testing. We've taken pains to make sure our interfaces are 508 compliant, but that really isn't meaningful until you actually test it with a human being who's trying to do something in particular on that. So, yes, sir. Yes.
The scanning and OCRing has been going on for some time now, but technology has improved quite a bit in that time. Do you ever go back and re-OCR some of the early scans to see if you can get more useful results out of them?
So I will tell you, first of all, HathiTrust doesn't really scan things. Our partners do. So Google does, Internet Archive does, libraries do. And in some cases, that has happened. In a lot of cases, that's happened where, especially as OCR improvements have been made, new engines are generated, original scans are actually reprocessed in some cases for that. So the quality has improved.
You mentioned the digital archives. Mm-hmm. Do you work with them, or are they different from you?
Internet Archive?
Yeah, Internet.
So Internet Archive, they're really good friends, and their collections often come into HathiTrust when a member library wants to deposit those. We don't have any kind of formal partnership, right? It's more like an informal arrangement. One of the things we've been talking about a lot lately is how to get more books digitized through Internet Archive from member libraries. And particularly there, we're talking about U.S. federal publications because those are publications that are open, that can be open. They're not under copyright. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of those in libraries that are not accessible. And so we're trying to work with them to understand pathways to digitizing more of that collection. So I think they're really good allies, but they're not a direct partner for us right now. So. The Internet Archive, they're based in San Francisco. If you're not familiar with them, they have this really cool service called the Wayback Machine. They've been web archiving since the late 90s. So if you want to go see how bad certain websites were back in 1996, 97, 98, you can do that there. So they do a lot of other more important work than that, too. So. There's a question here, I think.
Maryland has the Maryland Accessible Textbook Program, mm-hmm. where we already work with the DSS at different colleges. Mm-hmm. Is that an opportunity to belong to HathiTrust? We're authenticating through NLS.
I should probably talk to you directly and understand your situation a little bit better, and I can advise that. Our criteria for eligibility are academic and research libraries, and that, you know, you can sometimes drive a truck through a definition, right? But that there are some trucks that won't fit through it, so I just want to talk to you about it. So, yeah.
I'm not really sure I asked this, but I'm curious about your relationship, your thoughts about BookShare,
mm-hmm.
and how this relates to
I think life's too short to compete with anybody when you're in the line of work that we do. So Bookshare has a different service model in that a lot of what they do is user supported and also publisher aligned or publisher connected. So a lot of what they do is provide access to textbooks that publishers have provided physical copies or digital copies to Bookshare for. And it's a fairly specialized collection. Ours is general but specialized. It really, HathiTrust does not include a lot of textbooks, certainly no current textbooks. So Bookshare is also really has been funded to support K-12 and has less funding but still supports college as well. So there's a distinction there. We have been talking about how we can better connect our catalogs, but for me, for not having any staff at the time, we couldn't pursue that. So it's time to pick that back up. So, yeah. All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.